Okay, so this is lesson three. So we're going to spend some time talking about joyful submission for a few weeks, and then we'll follow that up with loving leadership. So one thing that I thought was interesting, Dave and I talked about, you know, which one should we do first, right? The joyful submission of the wife, loving leadership of the husband. And Dave brought up a really interesting point, I think. If you look at the commands or the instructions given and roles of leadership and submission, there's kind of a pattern, if you look. And I think that there could be some meaning or significance there. So if you think about wives and husbands, in Ephesians, Colossians, and 1 Peter, in all three, who does he address first? Addresses the wives first. And when you look at Ephesians and Colossians, he addresses children first, and then fathers, okay? When you look at citizens in the government, citizens are told to submit, and then the government, governing authorities are described as God's servants that are responsible for justice. So there's kind of this interesting observation that, and it's kind of contrary to what I think maybe just my worldly outlook would be, talk with the leaders first, and then whoever's following their leadership second, right? That, oh, the leadership is most important. But I think it's somewhat indicative of when Jesus talked about how, you know, the rulers of this world, they lord it over those who are under them. And they focus on subjecting or bringing those who are under them to make them or coerce them to follow their leadership. But as we talk about joyful submission, really Christ takes the direction of addressing those who are in the roles of submission, saying this is your role that you should be embracing. It's your responsibility, it's your goal, and it's your kind of purpose in those roles. And it's not up to the leader to bring them under submission. It's under those of us in those roles that to be subject. So that's kind of one unique difference. So that's kind of why we're starting. We're trying to follow that trend in one way. So let's look at this quote, all right? Any honest thinking person reading through the Bible cannot ignore the blatant misogyny and barbarity towards women. The eminent men of God who wrote the Bible were the product of a patriarchal, tribal, violent, intolerant, and monotheistic society. They reflect the ignorance and brutality of that society. And at the dawn of a new millennium, fundamentalists insist that we should all abide by biblical law. So not a real warm view of submission. So you maybe have heard some of those terms. I mean, they're still frequently used, the patriarchy, right? Misogyny. What does that mean to be misogynistic? A little vocab word there. Mm-hmm. Maybe. If we don't know, we probably shouldn't use it. Yeah. What does that mean? What do you think? If you've heard people use it, what do you how are they using it?
That men think they're better.
Mm-hmm. Thinking they're superior. Yeah. So originally it comes from two roots: hatred and women. So kind of a hatred of women or a looking down upon. And so, what are just some general things that, if you've had conversations or interactions with people, why would people associate, what is it about the Bible that people would associate with misogyny, hatred of women, or sexism? It's kind of some common prevailing thoughts.
Well, many of the men of the Bible did come from patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. The mistake, I think, is made is that they think that God is ordaining some of their actions that result from some of their customs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So look at some of the examples of men in the Bible.
I think maybe the common thing is when in the Bible it talks about how women are the weaker vessel.
Uh-huh.
So use that and like, oh, yeah.
So. Yeah, so there's a sense in which there's kind of a discussion almost like I would do with the weaker vessel, that some that men and women, you know, are there differences, you know, or are women just as strong? And in sports, I heard, you know, are they strong as fast as that type of thing?
I think that people don't
understand the culture of Old Testament, especially the law. They don't understand the principles behind the law, and so they just see it as these cold, hard laws that women were cast aside, but they didn't actually understand what God was doing, providing protection for women.
Yeah, so there's the law and, the, like you said, the culture. It's definitely something where they, it can be difficult to read into the Old Testament or even the New Testament and from the perspective of our 21st century American culture and time. So,
by the way, I looked up misogynistic.
Okay.
So, GYN is like Greek for women.
Right.
And so it's basically hatred of women.
Yeah. Hatred of women. The miso part is the hatred.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like looking down upon. It's they're
it's
evil.
Like contempt.
Yeah, contempt for women. So that's misogyny. And you can have, and again, so there's often in the discussion about against misogyny is the hatred of men almost. So it's like there's this war that is kind of the contrary to the biblical model where we have this hatred, men hating women or women hating men. And then there's a quote here from even a seminary professor here, Ephesians 5, which is one of the texts that addresses wives and husbands, has been used often as a club, almost a chokehold, to force sincere Christian women into submission. So let's kind of think about that. Why would people see and equate submission to cruelty or demeaning? Yeah.
Because our society is like super, I don't know, it's anything that's contrary to what our society says is seen as being inferior or seen as being sexist or racist or anything like that. So
you kind of said it's contrary to society. So what would be the contrary view if instead of women submitting to their husbands that society might endorse? Yeah.
I think there are two things. One, I think societally we equate leadership with value. So when someone has more strength, more authority, they're more valuable. And then I think partnered with that, I think there's been the reality with that submission that to submit someone has been done in an actually abusive way. So people have experienced the abuse of authority, and have aptly seen the evil in that.
Yeah. So that's kind of a really key thing we'll touch on throughout this study is that in the world when you look about leadership, you've got value, sometimes skill, ability. Right, reasons that someone might be put in authority, and then when you look at submission, right, there's kind of this view that this person's a lesser in terms of lesser value, lesser skill, or lesser authority. And then definitely they're concerned about, you know, the abuse of authority. And so when you think about submission, right, there can be a variety of reasons why they kind of bristle at that because it could be just authority in general. Yeah.
I think like the abuse thing is a valid reason, but it's like a valid reason taken too far. Like, I mean, it's the same with a lot of the other issues that are going on right now. Like, where it's like a valid not complaint, but just like you understand why people are reacting to the backlash of, you know, abuse and racism and other things, or bullying. But it's the problem is that it's the reverse. Like it's women are trying to replace men, basically.
Yeah, so I mean, in that case, it's not that they. I think there's maybe a third one where it's not that there's a problem with having an authority or a submission role, but like you said, sometimes people want to reverse it, and So there's the kind of the, we'll talk about the egalitarian, where we don't want to have any authority and we're just unequal in terms of decision making. And there's also the one, the desire to reverse. And so instead of being misogynistic and hating the women may want to be feministic in the sense that they're leading or ruling over men. Yeah.
I'd say the other part of that too, where they're talking about using it as a club, like verse, mm-hmm. but they're just taking it out of context. They're just reading like Ephesians 5:22-24, and they're just looking at the commands that is given to the wives. They don't continue to read on in like 25 and on about mm-hmm. the commands that are given to husbands.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely some reality, like you said, some validity. That when there is an abuse of authority, it kind of leads to, right, fear of submitting to that authority. So we've talked a lot of times about different authority structures. So what are some other authority structures that can sometimes abuse their authority?
Parents,
right? We see child abuse, and it's something that we want to make sure it doesn't happen. If you have that in the home, there's two different ways you can see abuse happening. We can see even people bristling against submitting to the governing authorities because they're abusing their power. Sure. You can see
maybe church abuse.
Church too. Abuse. Mm-hmm. If you've got pastors or elders who are abusing or just taking advantage of that power. And so there's kind of this conflict between when we see God's instituted authorities and then those authorities abusing their power, there's a tendency to want to just reject that authority structure as a whole. So what do you think? Does submitting to an authority figure, does it necessarily kind of create a difference in value?
Not that I understand it in the terms of the sense of
God. Yeah, yeah. So when we look at that relationship, we see the Son submitting to the Father. And so there's clearly not a difference in value there. There can be a difference in value when we submit to the Father's authority. We're definitely, he's more valuable and more worthy, but not necessarily, right? So one of the things we'll contrast a little bit is we're going to contrast between submission and what was called complementarianism and something called egalitarianism. So if you look at point C, this is kind of a debate that is happening in churches and Christian circles around gender. And in one side, you could think of egalitarianism would teach that all people are equal before God, and, so this is the and part, both genders can fulfill any function in the home, in church, and in society. So that's kind of the key part, not necessarily that they're equal before God, but that they, because of that equality, they should or could fulfill all the same roles. Egalitarians teach that both husbands and wives are called to submit to one another, believing that differing gender roles devalues women and leaves them open to exploitation. In addition, they would advocate for ordination of women for pastoral ministry in the church, believing that church leadership should also be determined by ability without regard to gender. So on the other side, we would say, is a complementarian position. And that would be the position that we would take here and that we're going to work through. And it teaches that while men and women, we would agree on several points, when men and women are equal in value in God's sight. But he has defined different functions for them within marriage and also within the church. And so we're going to look through the scriptures and try and explain and look at what are those different roles and how scripture upholds this particular view when it comes to God's plan for wives. So any kind of thoughts or observations about egalitarianism versus complementarianism, things that you've seen or interactions you've had with maybe someone that has the egalitarian views? Yeah.
I think if I were to write this again, there's kind of a new view that's emerging, kind of an openly patriarchal position.
So kind of...
that men are superior to women.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of nuances to it, but it's
so maybe
kind of a,
would that be kind of on the opposite?
The new right.
Uh-huh.
Doug Wilson influenced.
And then over here you've got egalitarianism.
Yeah.
what it perfectly balanced.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm, the patriarchalism is kind of a small group, but it is growing in traction, and some people are just being, it's good to know about it.
And oftentimes, you wonder if whenever we respond to anything that we are believe is not the correct view, sometimes we can overcorrect,
mm-hmm.
and we can see people going to extreme. Yes?
Oh, I was just going to make a joke.
Let's hear it.
So we have egalitarianism.
Oh, egalitarianism. Okay. That's good. I'm going to use that one.
You will.
I will totally use it. Yes. I'm ashamed I didn't think of it myself. Oh, my goodness. All right. So here we go. Let's start at the beginning. This is a very good place to start. It's at Genesis 2:18. Everybody, if you would turn there. Or you can look in your handout. What is Genesis 2:18? What does it tell us? Who's my reader? Who's got this one?
Go.
Then the Lord said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him."
Yeah, so God says right away, it's not good for man to be alone. He'd already made the entire animal kingdom, right? Male and female. So what's this? What's the idea of all the animal kingdom? He brought them before him. He named them all. Right? He's seen all this. What does that kind of suggest about like God's plan for how or the nature of the companion that he's going to make?
His companion is going to be suitable for him.
Yeah, suitable for him or like him or of him, of the same nature.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think that means? What does it mean to be a helper that's suitable? Or to be a helper? What's the idea behind it? Yes?
To serve, hopefully willingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, serving willingly.
It'll complement him. It'll fill the role, fill the areas that he's lacking.
Yeah, so they'll be different,
yeah.
And kind of help one another out in their differences. The term help carries a sense of aid and support. So like, kind of like Marlon what said earlier, like with how Christ submitting to the Father doesn't indicate any lesser value. We talk about helper, it's used of the Lord, right? Aiding his people in the face of his enemies in the Psalms. Right? The Lord is my helper. Moses spoke of God as his helper. So there's definitely no decrease in value, no decrease in position.
Yeah, I even think it's interesting how he goes through all the animals first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's kind of like this popular fiction that like dogs are children, dogs, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
You help the dogs.
Right, right.
The dogs don't help you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And even with the animal kingdom, we help them
mm-hmm.
way more, especially when we domesticate them, than they
mm-hmm.
help us. So there is, I think there's almost like this peer relationship where the mind, the ability, the skills, it's like
mm-hmm.
peers in every way, you know, separate from the animal kingdom in the same
mm-hmm.
genus, I would say that.
It's like he's finally met his match,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is
mm-hmm.
like the theme of great literature and epics is
mm-hmm.
when you finally meet your match, the one who's worthy, a worthy
mm-hmm.
opponent, but
mm-hmm.
in this case, a worthy helper.
Yeah.
Compliment.
Compliment, yes. Yes. Yeah, I think it's curious how like the word for suitable, like I think it's only used a couple times that way. A lot of times it just means like in front of or opposite or facing, like the complement or the mate that goes with
mm-hmm.
these two things are face one another in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the idea, is that it's not the exact same twin, it's this someone that comes together opposite or in front of or directly facing that is suitable or matches with the husband. So they're different but of the same equal nature and status.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think part of the egalitarian view with the struggle with this is that the man is not the helper of the wife. And so there's different roles, but
mm-hmm.
in the egalitarian view, it's equal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those equal thought processes aren't the same
mm-hmm.
When you're trying to understand this. And so it can be difficult to explain a little bit, whereas we would say yes, like we're, you know, have the same equal value.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different roles, whereas the egalitarian is this, you know, you have this. And so I think that's the biggest.
Yeah, and when we think about it, there's a difference between having your role being the helper and helping. Because there's many times where the husband does help the wife, right? And aids the wife in life. And so it's just in thinking about just primarily what's your main purpose. And there's times where a way of helping her husband is leading and teaching with the children or leading in different areas of where they've talked and delegated. So that's a good point. So I think one thing you talked about is how the wife is really indispensable. The man wouldn't be able to accomplish his role that God gave him without the woman. And so she was necessary, right? Integral part. And I think you hit on that when you said that, right? What the man lacks, the woman accomplishes. Man was not made for the woman, but the woman for man. And so the woman makes it possible for the man to fulfill his calling. So we talked a little about what the function would be. And then, anyone want to look up John 6:38? Let's look at the objection, right? If we say the woman's purpose in life is to help her husband, are we devaluing her worth?
Okay, what did you say
it was? It was John 6:38. John 6:38. What is that? Anybody got it?
It's Jesus speaking, "For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me."
Yeah. So Jesus was very clear all throughout his ministry. I'm here not to do, it's not about what my will is, but the one who sent me. And he wasn't saying, you know, I don't really agree with this, you know, but I'm going to go along with it, right? He was in total agreement, but also in submission to the leadership and the will of the Father. And so it doesn't imply that there's a division in necessarily that they have disagreement or different plans, but it does say that the Son is submitting himself to the plans and the will of the Father. And so how does that answer our question about wives? Tell us about wives and their role of submitting to the husband.
That submission doesn't equal value.
Yeah.
Lesser.
Yeah. Very much so. Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be times where the one who is submitting or following it even has much greater value or skill or ability. I always think about, like, oftentimes in sports teams, you have coaches, quarterbacks, receivers, you have all these different positions. Sometimes, you know, the one that's in authority is, you know, the all-star, and he's leading his quarterback and his receiver. Sometimes you have this all-star receiver who's doing all the work, but the quarterback's calling all the plays. So role doesn't really have anything to do with skill and ability. You can have all different varieties of skills and abilities in the submission or in the leadership role. Yeah.
I think one thing that's kind of interesting is when you look at egalitarianism, it's often not just restricted to a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It's even like expanded to parenting,
mm-hmm.
where you treat your children as peers,
mm-hmm.
and you reason with them, you talk with them, you let them have input into it. And I think part of that is the spirit of our age where we're just autonomous individuals, and nobody has a right to tell anybody else what to do.
Yeah. So
it's not like women should be in charge, should be the man or the woman in charge, like there should be somebody in charge. It's like nobody should be in charge of anyone.
And one thing I've found too is sometimes we can think about, and there are probably times where a couple is egalitarian because they're shying away from or not wanting the wife to be in submission. But I think there's also cases where the husband maybe doesn't want to embrace the role as leader or authority in a sense. And there's, because in many different roles throughout, like if you think about the slave master, employee-employer relationship, we're finding it's very common for people to resist stepping into the role of leadership. They would rather shy away from that. They don't want to carry that leadership burden. And so egalitarianism is kind of a way to try and say, well, let's just all be equal. We don't want to let anyone, no one wants to kind of take that increased
responsibility. Kind of like communism. Right,
what's that?
The same thought behind communism, where there's no person who assigns authority to somebody. Mm-hmm. So it's the spirit of our age.
Yeah. Well, let's keep reading. Let's look at Ephesians 5. So we're going to look at some of the specific texts. Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. Want to read that one? Go for it, Lauren.
Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything.
Yeah. So, who does he give the command to? To the wives, right? He doesn't give the command to the husband. He doesn't say, husbands, subject your wives, right? So, be subject. And does he give a reasoning or rationale? Right? Why are they to submit?
He's the head.
So that's a reason given. He's the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. And how does he say that they're to submit as well? He kind of describes it.
As to the Lord.
Yeah, as to the Lord. So he gives kind of the attitude, the demeanor, the position. Okay. And why do you think it's important that he, again, we talked about this at the beginning, right? He's addressing the wives and not really talking to the husbands right now. How would it have been received maybe differently if he had addressed it, husbands, subject your wives?
You can't make your wife submit.
Not in a Christ-like yeah. way, right?
I guess you can, yeah.
I think that's one of the things I read was that it would be very contrary to the typical way of addressing people of the day. Usually it's you talk to the head, tell them what to do, and then they're responsible for it. What else would have happened? Could have happened.
I think it still happens mm-hmm. that people use this verse as mm-hmm. a means to lord it over their wives. Mm-hmm. Instead of seeing it as a command to them, they see it as something they mm-hmm. husband can lord over.
Yeah. Or yeah, it's still
abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's still used that way.
It's still used that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How, I guess, think about it from the wife's perspective. If she's reading this and she reads, husbands, subject your wives, who's the command to there?
The husband.
The husband. So what role does she have? Just be acted upon, right? Receive the, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a sense in which one of the key things is that, again, it's giving direction to the wife and helping her know that she's morally responsible, she has a will, she has an intellect, she has all these abilities, and the Lord is speaking that this is a, you have a specific purpose, and this is how, you know, fulfilling this role is a way of submitting to the Lord, as to the Lord, right? And
there's
so
quite a bit of agency that given to the woman just by the command being to the woman.
Mm-hmm. Whereas at that time, there was probably not a lot of agency for women. And so that's kind of what another key observation that it could be that many times addressing the wives, addressing the wives, addressing the wives is raising or elevating them in terms of being morally responsible agents for their own lives and for their own walk with the Lord, that this is how you serve the Lord. This is your role. This is what God has given you and assigned to you. And you can honor him through your agency. It's not just your husband that can honor the Lord, it's you that can do so.
I think that's very important to remember for those who maybe take more of a stance, like the quote at the very beginning that you read about people believing how the Bible is, to this passage and mm-hmm. remembering how it would have been taken in context for them, right? Like often it was the opposite. They didn't have rights, they weren't valued by the men sometimes. Mm-hmm. God is valuing the women by telling them this is how mm-hmm. you are to, like, this is your job, you know,
yeah.
this is a good thing, here's mm-hmm. how I want you to behave, and you have, like you said, agency to act mm-hmm. on. Like, I mean, it's actually a very loving thing, going against some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah, and I do think it's because we believe in a creator and a designer, both parties are under submission.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that. Mm-hmm. And submission is not, you know, the ability to lead is not gained by your strength and force of personality or your ability to dominate.
Mm-hmm.
It's merely delegated, independent of the worthiness or giftedness
mm-hmm.
or ability of the man.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think when you think about, again, all I was just encourage the men and the husbands as well, that everything that we're really talking about, I mean, you can apply it in all the areas of submission for the most part. The attitude and the embracing the role as being subject to, all of us are subjects to the governing authorities. And if we're believers in a church, we're subject to the leadership of the elders. If you're a child, you could apply this to your submission to your parent. If you've got a boss at work, you could apply this as submitting to the masters or the lords over you. So there's a certain attitude of not shying away from when you're in the position of authority, but not rejecting your role as being submissive to in those areas or spheres of your life where you are under authority. And we are all under authority from one or more sources. And so everyone from the youngest to the oldest men and women, we can all kind of learn from gaining the attitude of how do we joyfully submit to the Lord by submitting to the authorities that he's given. And same with this, we can all learn how to deal with the potential for abuse of those authority figures in our life and what are our protections and how can we trust the Lord in that. Let's look at that word, actually. Sometimes we love to study words. If you don't have an app or a book or something on your computer that lets you look at the original words, the original language, I really encourage that. It's a great way to study the Bible and look at where those words are used, other places. So be subject is hupotasso, and I think hupo means under, right, below. So to arrange under, to subordinate, to subject or put in subjection, to subject oneself or to obey, to submit to one's control, to yield to one's admonition or advice, to obey, be subject. And so additionally, a Greek military term meaning to arrange the troop divisions in a military fashion under the command of the leader. But in non-military, it could also be, speak of a voluntary attitude of giving in, cooperating, assuming responsibility, and carrying a burden. Okay. Lots of good descriptors there. So let's look at a couple of places that it's used as well in the New Testament. So Titus 2:9. Can somebody read that? Titus 2:9. Leo, you got it?
Titus 2:9, urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters and everything, to be well-pleasing, not argumentative.
Right, so slaves and masters, right? You can see that context is used in that be subject, okay? And then somebody else, Tanner, you want to get 1 Corinthians 16 there?
Now I urge you, brethren, that you also be in subjection to such men, and that everyone who helps in the work can labors.
So there we're talking about church, leaders in the church, okay? And then, Andy, you get Romans 13:1.
Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God.
Yeah, so then we've got every person, right? So that kind of includes everybody, right? All of us are under a governing authority. Government, it's a gift of God, and it's established by God. There's kind of a quote here about how speaking to the abilities and the skill, the character of the man, or the position. So a soldier salutes the uniform, not the man. For whether the man is his superior in other ways or not, in the army he represents a certain level of authority. And so, you know, if you guys have had a job where you've had a boss, you may have had times where you've had a really good boss where you're like, they can do this amazingly better than I can. And maybe you've had a bad boss where you think, this person doesn't I don't think I agree with the way they're doing things. But regardless, your role isn't based on whether they're a great boss or a bad boss. It's based on their role and their position of authority.
So it becomes chaos in, well, business committees or anything with more experience, not politically correct anymore, but the phrase I grew up with is too many chiefs and not enough.
Yeah.
So when you have everybody trying to be in control, mm-hmm. with it, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Very true. And that's often a kind of a point in which it's very difficult to really move united in any direction without leadership, because you're always stuck fighting about what are we going to do. So it's definitely a question I have about egalitarianism. If you've got egalitarian husband and wife, or even your kids are egalitarianism, let's vote. Okay, we're up three different options. Let's vote again. Like, how do you ever move forward when you have no way of resolving a conflict? So it's very impractical in almost every avenue. There has to be a role of leadership. Any other observations there about looking at those texts?
Could I bring up 1 Corinthians chapter 14?
Yes, what is...
Well, it's definitely talking about ordering the church and mm-hmm. Prophesying in tongues. The prophets were to be subject to the other prophets, and the women to be subject to the law. So in there, I don't have to get into it. There's an order.
Yeah.
There's order and peace that...
Yeah.
In God's design.
And that is really good, bringing that text up. She was mentioning 1 Corinthians 14 about the orderly service of worship and how a lot of the instructions were given so that people knew how they could use their gifts and abilities in a way that brings honor and glory to the Lord, and it's in order and it helps and it's beneficial to everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's really, if we think about God's role for governance and authority structures, that's really the point, is that those authority structures exist to bless those who are under their leadership. And they're meant to be an act of grace and a role of grace to. Elders are meant to bless the church through leading them and guiding and directing them. Parents are meant to be a blessing to their children. And it orders things. And I've talked many times with parents about how the unhappiest children are those who are in charge of the home.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what they want, they don't know what will make them happy, and if you can imagine leadership as kind of a weight or a burden, when you ask a child to make all the decisions, you're placing this big weight that belongs on the parent's shoulders on the shoulders of this kid, and it crushes them under that, I don't know what's best, and then they make a choice and they're not happy with it. Mm-hmm. And so when you follow God's design for the leadership, you're placing those weights on the appropriate amount, people's shoulders so that they can carry it and bless those who are. And the happiest children oftentimes are under loving, strong leader parents. Mm-hmm. That this is what's best for you. We know what's best for you. This is how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like they can relax because they don't have to fight about things. They don't I know this is the way it's going to be. And so it can be that way in many structures. When you have loving leadership, you can have joyful submission. The two can go hand in hand. Yeah.
Why that in marriage also, for a woman to be in subjection to a man because he's the head of the household.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes men abdicate mm-hmm. their position as being a proper husband by just kind of sitting back and saying, well, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the wife can be begging them in mm-hmm. different ways to just please take this weight off of me,
yeah.
because that is not
mm-hmm.
not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
A woman doesn't sign up to be the sole responsible.
Mm-hmm.
person in a marriage.
Yeah. And it's definitely for those of you, right, that aren't married, be something to be thinking about as you look for and you pray about finding spouses. Are we together on how we view our roles, the roles of the husband and the wife as we prepare for marriage? What are your expectations? What are my expectations? Because again, you're both signing up for something. You want to make sure it's the same thing. Thank you. One thing we want to address is there's kind of an one kind of attack maybe is on how in Ephesians 5:23 the husband is the head of the wife. What does it mean? What is that word to be the head of the wife? Or get this from either the word or the context. What do you think that means?
Leader.
Leader? Okay. And why? Why did you say that?
Because they make the decisions on behalf of both of them. Mm-hmm.
And is it just the word head that makes you say, okay, the leader? Is it the context of the verse?
I think it's like both the context and the use of the word head. Because when you think of the head, you think of somebody who is taking that authority, like that authoritative position, mm-hmm. taking that leadership role on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Protector.
Protector, okay. Good. Is there anything in that in the text of, let's go to Ephesians 5. Let's go to Ephesians 5. And we've got 23 there. Let's do 22 through 24. 22 through 24. Maybe. Abe, you got 20?
Yeah. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in marriage.
Yeah. So he really kind of spells out what he means. So what's the comparison there? The husband is the head of the wife. Yeah, as Christ is the head of the church. And so you talked about your leader, right? Makes decisions, gives directions. Is there anything else that is given there in the context in terms of how Christ and the church interact?
The church submits to Christ, mm-hmm. so also the wives should submit to their husbands.
Yeah, exactly. So he's doing it, continuing that analogy. So in the same kind of way that the church is seeking to submit to the leadership of Christ, his guidance, the wife should submit. And then is there anything for the husbands in there before we leave? There's one little thing in there.
In verse 25 it says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for.
Yeah, so he gets and he spells that out a little more clearly there. In verse 23, we can see, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. So he's kind of alluding to that. He's the head and he's also the Savior, the one who died for the church. And so we start to see that Paul's using marriage as an analogy and for the church, and it's a picture of that. So, what does that suggest about the extent of the submission, right? The correlation husbands and wives, Christ and the church, right? As we just read, what is that? How much submission should there be?
In everything.
In everything, yeah. It says pretty clearly. There's the words, in everything. Is that difficult? Sometimes. It's not. Maybe you're speaking for how it could be difficult for other wives to their husbands. Just, I have a friend, and it's difficult for her. No. So why can that be difficult sometimes for wives to submit in everything, or to be subject in everything?
Because you may not agree with what husband.
Mm-hmm.
You may not agree with
yeah. Yep.
Some husbands have really strong opinions about everything.
So there can be, yeah. And sometimes it can just be, I don't know how to say. I might just hold that one inside.
Push it down.
Hold it back.
Edit. Glad that worked.
Yes.
I'll say it worked.
Are there other things? Yeah.
So
sometimes the husband's not a very good leader, and so it's hard for her to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like she's having to pick up the slack where he's not doing his
mm-hmm. job. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Sometimes it's not that he's too strongly leading that makes it difficult for
mm-hmm.
her to be subject, but sometimes it's, I don't really know what I'm supposed to be following or doing. I haven't had any leadership.
Yeah, I think sometimes husbands and wives have different interests and they're both good.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the husband gets a job opportunity that will pay a lot more money
mm-hmm.
and make the company more, and he knows that his present company is unstable,
mm-hmm.
but stability, financial security, all that is the promise, but
mm-hmm.
it involves moving away from a church community and
mm-hmm.
like an awesome school district.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the wife has the interest of, like, this is really good for the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two competing interests,
mm-hmm.
and both of them are good.
Yeah.
But that's why she might see him as being selfish, because his interests do not match
yeah.
with hers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes submission is hard because I have really good ideas.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And when you cede your ideas to someone else,
mm-hmm.
like there's this. Sometimes it's implying that yours is not as good
mm-hmm.
as his, and my pride gets real riled up
because
mm-hmm. I like to be a big deal
yeah.
and right all
yeah.
the time. So there's the, I mean, sometimes the husband can make it hard, and then sometimes
yeah.
it's my own sin.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that
mm-hmm.
I like to get my way.
Yeah.
I like it.
I really, you know, I really identify with what you're saying that first part, because this is very common. As a schoolroom classroom teacher for 20 years, I have an administrator, a principal, who will come in, and I'm like, I've been doing this, and I'm the expert, and they're like giving me advice and feedback, and usually it's the pride is what doesn't want to hear that. And I feel like the Proverbs, every time, like a fool hates correction and hates to be led. And there's this sense in which, yeah, I feel like I know what's best in that sense. So there's definitely that. It makes it really hard in every area to submit. But I do think sometimes, too, there's a real value. It works best when you value the other person's role in their, like in Dave's example, if they have a good talk, they can talk about the good things about, you know, their priorities and what's going to be best as a family. And ideally, there's me realizing, well, they, you know, they're in this role for a reason. They probably, there's often times where they are aware of things that I've not seen outside of my classroom. Definitely, very much so. I think one thing we didn't mention is sometimes the husband leads strongly and he makes some big mistake.
Yep.
And just messes everything up.
Yep.
Think about they take a financial risk or, right? And it's like you're, oh, that, I followed and that really hurt.
That's when the wife says, I told you so.
I told you.
Oh, wait, that's not the
point. Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard. And, you know, the husband kind of, you got to work to earn that trust back sometimes. If you've ever, as parents, if you ever, many times I've told my kids, oh, let's do this, let's try this. And then, oops, and the, you know, throwing them out and, oh. Many times. You don't see the scars, but I remember one time we were at the beach and I was like swinging them around. Woo!
There's sand.
There's water.
It's all soft.
It's good for them.
It was good. It was good. I valued the experience. My wife was valuing their safety and. They had so much fun for that first few revolutions.
So you're saying it like it happened plural.
I just remember one time. Maybe I blacked out the other day.
They don't remember it.
They
all.
Don't remember at all. Remember at all.
Maybe that was the last time.
Maybe that was the last time. Yeah. Yeah. So it's the person that's in the role of leadership, I will say, when they do mess up, right, that stings for, you feel really bad about that, whether it's with your kids or even in, you know, leading your wife. And so it takes a while both to earn the trust back, to kind of encourage them, you know, it's okay, we're in this together. I'm really sorry, that was stupid. Yeah.
But wives also can be easy on you guys, whereas when that happens, so a wise woman told me one time, you know, that we need to let our husbands make mistakes. Like, they're not perfect. We don't expect them to be perfect. That's not why God put them in the role of leaders. God's doing perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to let them.
Yeah, and it, and a wife that's, that understands. Yeah. And I think kind of like what you're saying, like there's I told you so versus, you know, it's all right, you know, and Marlon, what are you gonna say?
So it was Gary Smalley's marriage conference, his wife actually was the one who said it was rather presumptuous of her to assume that she should take that lesson that God was trying to teach her husband away from God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very true that if he never leads, he's not going to learn what it's like or how to lead.
Like when you toss your kid into the ocean.
I learned a valuable lesson.
You knew.
No.
You knew it was a bad idea.
Yeah, hold on tight. You get slippery with that water around there. See, and that was a valuable lesson that I'm sharing with you right now, not to repeat. Yes, too much sunscreen could be. All right, well, let's stop there. It's a very instructive moment for us. Let me close in prayer. Oh, Lord, we just really thank you that we've had a chance to just talk about the goodness and the blessing of authority, of leadership and submission. We thank you for how every role and every structure that you've created, it's for our good. It's for a way to order society, to order the family, to order the church, so that we can move forward in blessing you, blessing one another, loving our neighbors, and loving you. And I pray that as we continue to study, we would really learn to love our roles, to really embrace them, to see the beauty in the way that you created us each individually to fit our own specific role and purpose. And that they would be a way of glorifying you as the supreme creator of the universe, who is all wise above all things. In your name, amen.